Iranians across the country pay tribute to General Soleimani on the third anniversary of his assassination by the United States. Israeli forces raid a refugee camp in the occupied West Bank city of Bethlehem, killing a Palestinian teenager. Also ahead, Venezuela's president slams Washington's, quote, foreign policy blackmail regarding Caracas, saying the U.S. position towards his government makes no sense at all. Thank you for joining us. Now, top story, people have gathered in the southeastern Iranian city of Kerman to pay tribute to late commander Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani 3 years after his assassination by the United States. Kerman is where the general's body was laid to rest and is hosting a special ceremony to honor his memory. Rallies and commemorative ceremonies for the anti-terror icon are also being held nationwide. General Soleimani and Abu Mehdi al-Muhandis, the deputy head of the Popular Mobilization Forces in Iraq, were targeted in a U.S. drone strike near Baghdad International Airport in 2020. Back then, a UN special rapporteur on extrajudicial killings condemned the strike as a violation of international law. Iran has called the general's assassination state terrorism and has vowed to take revenge on masterminds and perpetrators of the drone strike in due course. Let's cross over to Kerman, the burial place of the late general, and speak to our correspondent there, Mehdi Abbasian. Mehdi, we're seeing more and more people gather as the day goes on. What's the latest there? What's the feeling like, the atmosphere? I imagine a feeling of mourning.
Hi, Wissam. Well, yes. Since the early hours of the day, this place was packed with people, and more are on their way to this place. At 12 o'clock, a rally began outside this area, which is the Martyrs' Graveyard of Kerman, and they are moving toward the graveyard to visit the tomb of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. Now, here, the diversity of people being here, talking about that, in addition to Iranians who came here from different provinces, I've come across people from other countries like India, like Iraq, like Nigeria. Now, when I talk to them and ask them why they are here today, they talked about General Qasem Soleimani not as an individual, but they rather talked about his ideology, how he worked and how he worked toward defeating Daesh. You see, General Soleimani was a great commander in the battleground. Now, presence of the huge crowd of people in this place shows that after 3 years, his ideology is still alive, although he might be dead. And the presence of the youth in this place shows that his path, the path of standing for justice, the path of fighting for the oppressed, it continues. It goes on. And people, if Sadr Soleimani, or better say General Soleimani, was just one person, right now his ideology has multiplied into thousands, millions, people who are not just limited to Iran, but the whole region, neighboring countries, and even the world. Back to you, Wissam.
For that, Mehdi Abbasian there at the burial site of the late General Qasem Soleimani, joining us live from Kerman. We have one of the martyrs during the 2020 assassination attempt by the United States is buried in Kerman. The other, Abu Mehdi al-Muhandis in Wadi Salam, the biggest, largest cemetery in the world. And that's the resting place where in Wadi Salam, in the holy Iraqi city of Najaf, where also many people have gathered there, as well as ceremonies and events that are taking place in Iraq today. Now, we also have Sundus Al-Asad, a Lebanese journalist, joining us from the Lebanese capital, Beirut. Sundus, when we see these crowds of people, it's like similar scenes to Arba'in. Millions of people flocking to the burial site of General Soleimani. And on the other hand, you have Western mainstream media who say that the Iranian people are opposed to the Islamic Republic and its ideals. General Soleimani was a symbol of the Islamic Republic and he represented all of the Islamic Republic's ideals. What do you make of that?
Assalamu alaikum. First of all, thank you for having me. I extend my condolences for all the resistance peoples across the globe on this sad day, on which we lost one of the main pillars of the resistance. It has been a great loss. Losing those two commanders, Sardar Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis. But on that day, the arrogant powers, the U.S. and the Zionist enemy, thought that they will weaken us and they will fragment the resistance powers. But however, they have failed. Today, the resistance resisting peoples are united and will continue on the path of Sardar Soleimani. Sardar Soleimani, who is the fervent revolutionary son of Imam al-Khomeini and his Islamic revolution, which is a revolution to save the entire humanity, which is a revolution that upholds lofty values of justice, of peace. Today, those mainstream media and the arrogant powers are across the globe who thought that by killing us, they weaken us. By killing one of our beloved leaders, such as Haj Qasem Soleimani, they will weaken us and they will force us to surrender. Today, we are all united. From Syria to Lebanon to Palestine, all the way to Yemen, to Kashmir, to Nigeria. Today, we, the oppressed nations, are all united on the path of Haj Qasem Soleimani. We owe him all the sacrifices that he have paid for us. Haj Qasem Soleimani has saved our lives. Haj Qasem Soleimani has sacrificed his own blood. He has abandoned his family. He has abandoned prestigious life pleasures to save our lives, to help us live freely. Here in Lebanon, everyone knows the role of Haj Qasem Soleimani since the onset of the resistance. His role in the July 2006 war, when he was along Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah and Haji Mahdi Mughniyye to save our righteous cause, our righteous resistance. Haj Qasem Soleimani is a student of Imam al-Khomeini and a soldier in the army of Sayyid Ali al-Khamenei. He is one of those who has sincerely practiced the jihad of Tabyin to show how those enemies, imperialist power, try to manipulate us, try to loot our resources and incite division among our peoples. Haj Qasem Soleimani has been able to unite us, has been able to strengthen our resistance, have been able to awaken us. He's the son of Kerman, but he has crossed borders. He has crossed all the borders, the geographic borders, the linguistic borders, the cultural borders. He has been at the service of every human being, in the service of, he has helped humanity to get rid of the takfirist, of this vicious catastrophic plight that the U.S. has found and funded.
Right, yeah. And just finally, Sandus, as you're in Lebanon, and we kind of alluded, mentioned this earlier as well, we know, and you would know better than me, that following the martyrdom of Hajj Imad Mughniyeh in Damascus, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah for the first time revealed who Hajj Imad Mughniyeh was, a man who attached his life to the afterlife. No one knew who he was. And it was the first time that we heard about Hajj Imad Mughniyeh, especially for like the region. Perhaps some in Lebanon had heard of him. Nevertheless, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah told the Israelis that if you think you've killed Imad Mughniyeh, you've made a very grave mistake, because Imad Mughniyeh left behind tens and thousands of trained soldiers at his rank, the rank that he reached in military skills as a military advisor. So, and this was an Imad, Hajj Imad or Hajj Radwan, as they refer to him in Lebanon, is someone who was trained by General Soleimani. So, of course, after the loss of General Soleimani, there was tens of millions of other Soleimanis. Do you want to just touch on that?
Yes. As I have mentioned earlier, that yes, they have murdered Hajj Qasim Soleimani. By murdering him, he has got what he has yearned to. He longed for martyrdom. But definitely, every one of us here in Lebanon, our sons, our fathers, the upcoming generations will complete on his footsteps. They are all Hajj Qasim Soleimani. His path will not stop. We will complete his mission. We will complete his mission until the collapse of this temporary illegitimate Zionist occupation, and the end of the American hegemony against our people and against our nations.
Okay, Sandus, thank you very much indeed for that. That was Sandus Al-Assad, a Lebanese journalist, joining us live from the Lebanese capital, Beirut. Earlier, we were joined by analyst Sina Rahmani for his take on the assassination of Iranian anti-terror commander General Qasim Soleimani. So let's take a quick listen to that.
Qasim Soleimani represented this system and a system of resistance. And whatever you want to say about the Islamic Republic or whatever its internal workings are, its failures, whatever you want to say about that, in terms of its foreign policy has been one of stalwart resistance to the imperialist project of the region, right? Its primary sort of regional base is this country called Israel, right? The Zionist regime, and all these sort of surrounding, basically, you know, countries that were created directly by imperialists. You know, this is where their sort of bases and the American bases and their allies are based, right? And like this, the primary goal of this is to, surround Iran. And at one point they were surrounding Iran. I mean, I think at some point in like the mid-2000s, there were 500,000 troops on both sides of the Iranian border in Afghanistan and Iraq, right? So this is the context that the last 20 years we've been in. And this is, I feel, that the story that we don't take up, which is like America and its allies, and it doesn't really have allies, right? It has vassals and proxies, is that it has waged a genocidal war against an entire region, spanning North Africa all the way to Afghanistan and Pakistan. And that is a massive project that has displaced something like 38 million people, killed upwards, I can't remember the exact figure, but in the millions.
Israeli forces have killed yet another Palestinian in the occupied West Bank. The latest victim of the regime's crimes is a teenager. Adam Ayad was shot dead during a raid on a refugee camp in the city of Bethlehem. This comes a day after Israeli troops killed two Palestinian men elsewhere in the West Bank. The two were fatally shot during an incursion into a village near the city of Jenin. The regime's military conducts raids across the occupied territories almost on a daily basis now. At least 150 Palestinians have been killed since January last year in Israeli raids and invasions of the occupied Palestinian territories. The Venezuelan president has slammed the U.S. for its, quote, foreign policy blackmail towards his country. Nicolas Maduro says U.S. support for institutions that don't exist makes no sense at all. Recently, Venezuela's opposition-led National Assembly voted to disband their so-called interim government, backed by the U.S. and led by Juan Guaido. The U.S. National Security Council then announced the country will continue to back Venezuela's interim government, regardless of what form it takes. Caracas cut off relations with Washington in 2019 after it backed Guaido, who had declared himself president of Venezuela. The U.S. then launched a series of oil embargoes and targeted sanctions to force Maduro out of office. Well, that brings an end to our bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
School of Soleimani. Today is the martyrdom anniversary of the unmatched general Qasem Soleimani, whose very name would send shivers to the hearts of terrorists and their masters everywhere in the world. 3 years after the martyrdom of the great commander of the Resistance Front, and in fact the symbol of this front, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, his name and fame have spread all across the planet more than ever before. He was the great man who feared nothing. This is why the people of the region and the world know him for his courage and valor. As for the last part of this 5-part series, we're going to discuss his unique role in thwarting schemes that had been planned by the United States and the Zionist regime of Israel and their accomplices among the Arab world, particularly the regime in Saudi Arabia. Please stay with us. The leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, said in a speech, "Some people make a mistake to raise realism against idealism. They think that realism is the opposite of idealism, but this is a big mistake. When a person, an establishment and a nation, with their officials persist on ideals and do not agree to come short and work for them, realities will change towards ideals. This is the greatest reality and the law of life. Martyr Qasem Soleimani was a realistic idealist. He enjoyed abundant natural potential to turn his lofty ideals and goals into operational plans. In a part of Ayah 249 of Surah Baqarah in the Holy Quran, the Almighty says, "How many a small party has overcome a larger party by Allah's will?" Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani put this verse into practice in his own life. For years, it was said that the Zionist regime was the fourth military power in terms of strategy and tactics. It was propagated all over the world, especially among the regional nations, and the illegitimate regime is absolutely invincible. But the great commander of the Resistance Front, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, first challenged this lie through strengthening the resistance units in Lebanon and Palestine, and then he showed that this was simply a big lie with the help of these forces. Today, the Israeli terrorist military is facing a group of people who have been inspired by the thoughts of the Holy Defense era of the 1980s and strongly believe in the divine promises. The sound of annihilation of the Zionist regime can be heard in the streets of occupied Palestine. Qasem Soleimani was described as a nightmare for the Israeli regime, the most powerful general of the Middle East and the architect of Iran's strong strategy. These epithets imply the preeminent role played in West Asia by Qasem Soleimani. American officials, both military and non-military, had asked to meet with General Soleimani several times, but he had rejected all such requests. Martyr Soleimani even didn't answer a letter sent to him by John Kerry, the US Secretary of State at the time, begging to meet him. This while he would meet with many senior officials of various countries like Russia. Qasem Soleimani was not a diplomat, but his statements during the meetings with officials of various countries would affect regional plans. He believed that Americans needed the photos of meetings as a tool for propaganda more than negotiations. He maintained that Americans are not honest even in war, and they would betray those who are with them in the same front. This has been done several times in their dealings with Pakistani and Iraqi officials. Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani knew the enemy well and was quite aware of its intrigues. He was of the opinion that the United States has a multivalent policy. Hence, When it fails underground, it tries to push the rival back in another one. Soleimani said that decisiveness is the only answer to the US plots in this region. Therefore, the messages that Russians conveyed to Americans on his behalf were always decisive and unequivocal. When the former US President Donald Trump started threatening Iran while ranting in a speech, Qasem Soleimani, in one of his speeches in 2018, reminded him of US's disgraceful presence in Afghanistan, Iraq, and Yemen. In fact, he mentioned the reasons for his hostility with the United States. Addressing the US President, Mata Soleimani said, "As a soldier of this nation, I answer you. Are you threatening us with a measure that has been unprecedented in the world? Ask the military commanders, the American politicians, the heads of American security organizations, the KGB and the CIA, and do not utter what you do not know. Have you left anything undone that you could have done?" Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, referring to the United States attacking and occupying Afghanistan, continued in his speech addressing former U.S. President Donald Trump. Lieutenant General Soleimani said, "You came with 110,000 soldiers and thousands of tanks, armored personnel carriers and advanced military facilities, attacked a weakly equipped organization, the Taliban, which had preliminary weapons and attacked Afghanistan. You didn't refrain from committing any crimes. You turned weddings into mourning ceremonies. You razed whole villages to the ground. More than 60% of your killings have been ordinary Afghans. What on earth have you done since 2001 that you said whoever is not with us is against us? Till now, 2018. Aren't you beseeching Taliban now for peace and talks? Is it not true that you put Pakistan and the government of Afghanistan under pressure for peace talks? What on earth have you done vis-a-vis the Taliban, which is only a part of Afghanistan, that you are now threatening us? The United States was defeated in Iraq as well. The U.S. regional commander had sent a representative to meet with Lieutenant General Soleimani. They had asked the great commander, "Can you give us respite and use your influence so that our soldiers may not be attacked by the Iraqi Mujahideen in order for us to exit Iraq?" Haj Qasem Soleimani reminded Donald Trump of this in his speech and continued, "Have you forgotten that you would prepare adult diapers for your soldiers inside tanks? Are you threatening our country? And why are you threatening us? On what grounds? Is there any crime left that you have not committed? You have committed the most horrible crimes in Iraq. You broke into the homes of people and smashed women and children. The events which took place in Abu Ghraib prison is a disgrace and a blemish on the United States forever. Are you threatening the Iranian nation?" At the end of his speech, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani forthrightly told Donald Trump and whoever is thinking about attacking Iran, he said, "There is no need for the Iranian armed forces. I am your rival. The Quds force is your rival. Know that we do not sleep any night without thinking of you. I tell you, Donald Trump, the gambler, know that we are near you, where you never think of. We are beside you, where you can never imagine. We are the nation of martyrdom. We are the nation of Imam Hussein, peace be upon him. We have passed through hard events. Come, we are waiting for you. We are the men of this field. We know that this war means annihilation of all your facilities. You will start this war, but it is we who will end it.
علي حبه جنة وسيم النار والجنة وصي المصطفى حقا إمام الناس والجنة.
The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen. Wassalatu wassalamu ala sayyidina Muhammadin wa ala ahli baytihi at-tayyibin at-tahirin. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of the Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the topic of prophethood, whereby we are at the moment trying to analyze and understand the socio-political status in which the prophets and messengers belong to. And we said that they belong to the lower class. They didn't belong to the upper higher class, the rich, the affluent, and the, let's say, the royal families and the royal class of the society. They didn't belong to that. They came from within, you can say, within the depths of the weaker class of the society, the normal general public of the society. That's how they were. And we give the example of Iran before the coming of the Islamic Revolution. It was like this, that there were also two groups of people. There was one group of people that were, they had the control of the society in totality, in every sense, while another group of people were the ones that were downtrodden and suppressed. They were the lower class. And This duality was there in different places of the world at the time of the prophets. Also, this was there, and the prophets came from the lower class. They didn't come from the higher class of the community. This is there. If you look at history, all the messengers of God, all the prophets of God, they came from the lower class of the society.
You are listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Now, many times when we look at the world today, we feel that there is a form of democracy whereby the normal people of the community, the poor class, the lower class, let's say, those who are poor, those who are downtrodden, the weaker class has authority, and they have the decision-making power to decide for the future of their societies and their communities. But if you look at it carefully, this is not the case. Majority of the democracies are not ones that really reflect the will of the people. You look at, for example, some of the countries of the world, whereby in those countries, you, for example, have the House of Lords. Okay, now what do you mean by the House of Lords? Whereby in these House of Lords, only an exclusive group of people are allowed to enter in that House of Lords, and they have a say in the decision-making of the community. Or, for example, there is a particular country. There are certain countries where the royal family, there's a royal family, and it's exclusive to that only. And they have the authority to, for example, decide when a country can go to war and whether it should go or it should not go to war. So it looks like it is a democracy, but it isn't a democracy in reality. The actual decisions are made somewhere else. Look at the other communities also, whereby they claim that there is a democracy. But in reality, there is a group of rich people that are monopolizing the decision-making of those places. Even if there is, for example, there are some ministers and some parliamentarians and presidents chosen by the people, but at the end of the day, who ends up being chosen? I mean, who ends up being allowed to take that position of presidency? How does he find his way up to the level that he can now be chosen as a president? How is that vetting process? Is it really a real vetting process, or is just a, you know, you can say a fake, a surreal, you know, vetting process, which is not real, not based on true criteria, but based on what the rich people, those big corporate companies and their chiefs, those big social media companies and their chiefs, they are the ones that decide, or some of the rich people of the world that control the wealth, the 1%, are they the ones who decide, or it's the people who decide? At the end of the day, it seems like there is a kind of illusion of democracy whereby people feel that they have authority, but they do not have authority in reality. And this is something sad that we need to think about as communities. And we will see that when we talk about prophethood, how the prophets came from these same communities and how they gave value to the will of the people, inshallah, in the coming sessions.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
Now, we say that when we look at the world of today, we still see that there is this duality, that there is a rich class, there is a 1%, and there is a 99%. There is a class, a group of people that are in full control about the future of the country, about the future of the community, but there's another group that is not in control of the future of that community. The moral direction that community has to take, the social perceptions of that community, the type of mindset that community is supposed to be having, the fact that community, when can it go to war and when it cannot go to war. All of this is something that is unfortunately decided by a very small group of people and does not reflect the will of the general society. And many times, unfortunately, because nowadays it has become even more complicated, the opinions of the people are manipulated by these same rich bourgeoisies to control the way they think, to manipulate their feelings, their thoughts through the different social media platforms that exist. So in other words, what is happening is that we have a group of people that want to control and another group of people that are weak and they don't have a will in reality. There is an illusion of will, but there is no real will. In the past, what would happen is that people would know that I am controlled by another person. But nowadays it has happened that Even a person who is controlled does not realize that he is being controlled. Does not realize that. And this is a sad reality. Now, all of this discussion was to make us understand one thing, that in the world, we have this duality. In different parts of the world, in different stages of the growth of humanity, where the prophets came from is from this group that was downtrodden, that was looked down upon, that was called by the rich and the high class as the lower class. This is the group from which the messengers came, with strength, with wisdom, with knowledge and understanding, and they guided the communities towards the right direction. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome, on the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio.
قال النبي محمد من كنت مولاه هذا علي سيد فاز من ولاه هو بالكتاب مسدد والنور معناه باب العلوم ومرشد هو آيات الله من ناداه أو لبه حين دعاه نال مناه هو في الشدائد منجد والفضل يمناه هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي رباه.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The U.S. administration is not only unable to fulfill its promises, but also insists on a racist, xenophobic and repressive view of immigration. And while the number of immigrants entering the United States' southern border with Mexico reaches record levels, the treatment of illegal immigrants violates human rights in many cases. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The Reuters news agency tells us more. Immigration arrests nearly doubled in 2022 compared to 2021, as border authorities apprehended more migrants and courts blocked the so-called efforts of U.S. President Joe Biden to more narrowly target detentions to focus on serious criminals. According to data released on Friday, 30th of December, U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, arrested nearly 143,000 immigrants in the 2022 fiscal year, which ended on 30th of September, close to double the number in 2021. The data showed around two-thirds of those arrested were of people with only immigration violations. Officials said on a call with reporters most were migrants apprehended at the U.S.-Mexico border, with no criminal convictions or charges pending, and who were transferred to ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. At the same time, Immigration and Customs Enforcement deported around 72,000 migrants to more than 150 countries around the world and aided Border Patrol agents in expelling many more from the United States under pandemic-era restriction known as Title 42. Deportation under a statute known as Title 8 is a more formal and drawn-out process that can lead to long bars on U.S. re-entry as compared to expulsions that can take just hours under Title 42, a policy that has been in place since the beginning of the COVID pandemic in March of 2020. U.S. Border Patrol agents apprehended a record 2.2 million migrants at the southwest border in the 2022 fiscal year, close to half of those arrested were rapidly expelled under the Title 42 policy. Those not expelled are either released into the country to pursue immigration claims or detained by Immigration and Customs Enforcement. According to Immigration and Customs Enforcement report, more Nicaraguans than any other nationality are currently detained, as migrants from that country are crossing with increasing frequency. Generally, Mexico only accepts the expulsion of some nationalities, mostly Mexicans and Central Americans, and more recently Venezuelans, under Title 42. In 2022, overall, the agency held an average of 22,600 people in custody, with another 321,000 enrolled in an alternative to detention program, which requires release migrants to check in with Immigration and Customs Enforcement. After President Biden took office in January of 2021, his administration issued Immigration and Customs Enforcement guidelines to prioritize the arrest of more serious offenders and de-emphasize enforcement against non-criminals, in contrast to the hardline immigration policies of his predecessor, Donald Trump. CNN News Network has also covered the same story. The U.S. Supreme Court said on Tuesday, 27th of December, that the controversial Trump-era border restriction known as Title 42 will remain in effect while legal challenges play out in courts of law, a move that ensures that federal officials will be able to continue to swiftly expel migrants at U.S. borders at least for the next several months. The 5-4 order is a victory for Republican-led states that urged the Supreme Court to step in and block a lower court opinion that ordered the termination of Title 42. The Biden administration has said it was prepared for the authority to end and had put in place precautions to guard against confusion at the border and any potential surge of migrants. In its order, the court also agreed to take up the state's appeal this term. The court said it would hear arguments on the case during its argument session that begins in February of 2023. Chief Justices Sonia Sotomayor and Elena Kagan said they denied the application, but they did not explain their thinking. Conservative Chief Justice Neil Gorsuch also dissented and explained his thinking in an order joined by Liberal Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson. Neil Gorsuch said he does not discuss the state's concerns about border security. But Gorsuch noted that Title 42 was put in place to combat COVID-19, and the current border crisis is not a COVID crisis. Chief Justice Neil Gorsuch wrote, "Courts should not be in the business of perpetuating administrative edicts designed for one emergency only because elected officials have failed to address a different emergency." Since March of 2020, Title 42 has allowed U.S. border agents to immediately turn away migrants who have crossed the southern border in the name of COVID-19 prevention. Immigrant advocates and public health experts have long denounced use of public health authority along the U.S. southern border with Mexico, arguing it was an inappropriate pretext for barring migrants from entering the United States. According to U.S. Customs and Border Protection, in nearly 3 years, the authority has been used over 2 million times to turn away migrants. At the border, migrants have been waiting in encampments in Mexico for months, anticipating the end of the authority so they can make their claim of asylum in the United States. Immigrant advocates have tried to disseminate updates and information to migrants, but desperation has grown, especially as temperatures drop. Agence France-Presse has also covered the same story. The decision to uphold the controversial rule known as Title 42 stemmed off a looming political crisis for President Joe Biden. as thousands waited at the southern border with Mexico in expectation the policy was about to end. The U.S. Supreme Court said Title 42, which allows the swift expulsion even of people who might qualify for asylum, would remain in place pending its own ruling on the issue, and that it would hear the case in February of 2023. The court claimed in its 5-4 ruling, 19 states contend that they face an immigration crisis at the border and policymakers have failed to agree on adequate measures to address it. The states suggest the only means left to mitigate the crisis is an order from this court directing the federal government to continue its COVID-era Title 42 policies as long as possible. The ruling could give the Biden administration, which had conceded that Title 42 was wrong and had prepared for a surge of asylum-seeking migrants, until May or June before a final decision is announced. White House spokeswoman Karine Jean-Pierre said the administration will comply with the court's order and prepare for the hearing. Louisiana Senator Bill Cassidy claimed that removing Title 42 would have made our border crisis worse, and the White House seemed willing to let that happen. Carla Marisol Vargas, senior attorney at the Texas Civil Rights Project, in a statement said, "As a COVID control strategy, a humanitarian policy and a border policy, Title 42 has not only failed, but caused irreparable harm on a massive scale."
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird Eutelsat 3B and Iran Sat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, Hadith of the Day, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we are going to be looking at a very beautiful and noble hadith, which is about rich people. This hadith has been narrated from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. You know, wealth is a topic that has been alluded to in many verses of the Holy Quran and many, many hadiths. For example, in the Holy Quran, we read the following: "It is not your wealth nor your children that will bring you close to us in nearness, except those who have faith and act righteously. It is they for whom there will be a twofold reward for what they did, and they will be secure in lofty abodes." So in this verse of the Holy Quran, as you can see, God Almighty says wealth can lead to otherworldly reward. If a person acts with faith and righteously with it. So wealth is not in and of itself, neither is it reprehensible, nor is it something essentially virtuous. It depends on what you do with it. In this beautiful hadith, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam was present where a man mentioned rich people. And, you know, in the presence of the Imam, this person became, you know, angry at these rich people. He became, you know, defaming them and, saying bad things about them. The Imam alayhi salam became quite angry. He said in a very angry tone, "Uskut," be quiet, you know, which is very rare. The Imam then says, "For verily, if the rich man maintains relations with his kin and does good to his fellow believers with the aid of his riches, Allah doubles his reward for him." Meaning Allah would double the reward for him.